Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Living in Alignment with Julie. I'm your host, Julie Kara Hoffenberg, and the author of Homeless to Happy in a Split Second. You can find my book and information at juliekarahoffenberg.com. Today I will be continuing a dialogue with E.J. Seals Jackson, author of Living from Within. You can find her at EJ Seals, S-E-A-L-S, Jackson.com. If you missed part one and two of the Living From Within series, please review those here on Blog Talk Radio or on iTunes, as they provide the foundation from which we build over this four-part series. Part one dealt with the reconnection between our thoughts and feelings and the law of attraction. We discussed how now our present moment is our PowerPoint. It is the way into ourselves and our ability to create through empowered thoughts and feelings. On part two, we reframed COVID-19 and discussed how our thoughts and feelings are directly connected to our experience of COVID. We gave examples of how people can feel better about the situation at hand and some tools for personal development. Today, we will be touching on another sensitive topic, which is the current racial tension and Black Lives Matter movement. On the last show, I made clear our intentions, and I will do the same here just to prevent any confusion or assumptions. First, we are not saying that prejudice does not exist or that racially based crimes do not exist. Second, we are not saying that we don't have the deepest of compassion for anyone who is suffering after a racial or hate crime, or anyone who has lost someone due to these crimes. Our hearts are with you. We are not against people who stand up in solidarity and union. And lastly, any racially based crime or discrimination is absolutely inexcusable. We want to be clear that we are not against people on our show, as we said in the last show. We are with you, and we are opening up a dialogue that brings us away from the focus on racial tension and toward racial peace or oneness. We are re-examining the ways that don't seem to serve us anymore and bringing awareness to some new possibilities by beginning to tell a new story. As we discussed in our other two shows, the external world is created through every thought we have, good or bad, every feeling we have. What are we currently thinking and feeling about our racial situation? And as stated on the show page, how can we begin to have peace if our focus continues to be the proof that peace does not exist? How can we begin to step into oneness if our focus continues to be on separation? How can we begin to empower ourselves when we continue to focus on all the ways in which people have lost their power? And lastly, how can we begin to see the good in others when we are focused on all the wrong they are doing? Today's show is a re-remembering of our power. We have lost the awareness of our innate power to create anything we want. In a moment, I'll be welcoming EJ onto the show, so we may begin a dialogue about how to step into the present moment and access the power that is always available to us, and how she has been navigating the BLM movement and some racial tensions in her own Chicago area. She has some beautiful ways to begin empowering herself that others might also like to utilize, so that our focus is no longer on how we are failing to create racial peace, but instead on the possibility and awareness of all the peace that already exists. EJ will be discussing some, let's say, elephants in the room, things that tend to be swept under the rug, but also are relevant to our talk today and that can help bring awareness to more of what's really happening. It is from that point that we will shift our awareness to then what can be done. The individual holds the power to shifting the community. So we will focus on what we as individuals can do to come into alignment, peace, and oneness bit by bit. I'll now welcome EJ onto the show and have her discuss a bit about her book, Living From Within, and how her chapter on today's topic came about. Welcome, EJ. Are you there?
I am here. Hey, Julie.
Hey, EJ.
And everybody, hey. What was that?
I said, let's do it again.
Let's do it again. Let's do it again. I look forward to it. So, okay, I'm Ebony, and that's Ivory. Or is that Ivory and I'm Ebony?
Right, right.
Maybe it does. I think we've determined that it really doesn't matter.
Right.
So anyway, we're going to get started. Ivory over there told me just come out here and kick butt. Now, that isn't exactly what she said, but I don't want to align her good name. So let's just do this. She's a fine, upstanding citizen, you know. Okay, so I want to start this with a quote from Betsy Otter Thompson, who is, you know, quoted throughout my book. And she says, surrender to hate and lose your reason for being. Surrender to love and gain your reason for being. Now, the sensitive topic that Julie was referring to, and that she was referring to is Black lives do not matter to other Blacks, and that's what I'm going to get into. But a funny thing has happened to me in to this regard, and Julie and I have been kind of talking about it, so I'm going to say this first. You know, once we get into the space of nothing is important but that I feel good and understanding how the law of attraction just bring more of that, you really get removed from anything that is not in alignment with that. And that was really what was happening to me now. I found that, now I'm going to discuss this topic because it's necessary, but I found that it was looking at the statistics of what I'm about to speak on. I wasn't in alignment with that. So I said to Julie, and I'm saying to you, I'm going to address this because it is the elephant in the room, and it does need to be discussed. But this is kind of a one-shot deal on that particular subject. Now, it doesn't mean that I wouldn't be involved in the solutions to this, but just to look at the statistics and the images were too disturbing for me, and that's a good thing. Because it means that I am in alignment with love, and I am in alignment with what brings me joy. And that's what we, and Julie and I, that's what we want to present to the world out there. So I'm going to frame this in the context of love. Now, I'm going to start by saying the Black Lives Matter. I believe that life matters. I am a supporter of life. It does, whether it's human, animals, trees, nature, I enjoy life. So that's one thing I want to say. I'm not in alignment with any exclusion of lives that matter. Mm-hmm. Now, I felt compelled to write this book, but this is one of those things, it's a dirty job, but somebody's got to do it, because this is something that needs to be said. But I wanted to present it in the context of love, alignment, and that this is an opportunity for us to grow and to do more. But we do have to look at the problem, which nobody has done in a meaningful way, and that's what I want to present to you now. So let's start with the statistics, and they are mind-boggling, so much so that this time, and it's interesting that before now, I mean, I didn't love it, but it was okay for me to go through those and look at what happened. Now it's not okay, and that's a good thing for me. So, but having said that, this is where I'll start. I certainly have compassion for those whose lives were taken by, you know, the law enforcement, whites or whatever. I have compassion for that. But on the same weekend that they first started, the Black Lives Movement first broke. On that same weekend, Memorial Day weekend, there were 92 people who were shot and 27 killed. Those were black-on-black crimes, okay? On July 4th, I just grabbed this kind of randomly because, like I say, you know, I just didn't want to go that much into detail. On July the 4th, 87 people shot, 7 were killed. This is in our neighbor. This is what we are doing to ourselves. And that's what we have to take a look at. Nobody seems to want to have that conversation, but we cannot ignore that. So when I see signs that say stop killing us, you know, my first thought is, yeah, you don't, we got this. We are killing up each other at an alarming rate. Another statistic that I want to bring out, and this is also pretty startling, 75% of blacks are victims of violent crime. 75%. Now, that's pretty hefty. But get this, 71% of blacks are perpetrators of those crimes. Now, that is just really, that is just as unacceptable as police brutality, racially motivated crime. This is, in my mind, this is equally unacceptable. We are destroying families on a daily basis. And we have got to look at what can we do about that. Now, one of the questions that I, one of the things you and I kind of discussed, why do these crimes go unnoticed? And we kind of came up with a couple of things. And, you know, one of the things she's saying is probably the most accurate. We are so accustomed to pushing up against and fighting and battling and struggling. We are so accustomed to doing it that way, you know, going against, you know, we just, people just aren't looking at this. Now, the powers that be, and I'm talking about, you know, the celebrity types and that kind of thing, these are not unkind people. So you do have to wonder why they will put, so, and there's nothing wrong with this, they will put so much energy into the other crime, but let all of this go unnoticed. And not only that, this has been going on for years. This is just did not start happening. So what I am here to do, my intent is to bring awareness. We talk about, and I'm talking about awareness that can only come through celebrity status. And the reason I say that is because it has to be done in a way to get the attention of the masses. Now, there are heroes in all of these communities that are working night and day to protect their communities, but you don't know about that because the cameras are not there. One of the questions I heard somebody ask, one of the organizers, whatever, leaders of the other Black Lives Matter movement at one of the funerals, okay, and the person mentioned that someone said, we're just doing this just for the publicity. I didn't listen to what he reasoned was behind that because it does look that way. I'm not saying it is that way, but in order for a black life to matter, it has to be at the hands of the police or at the hands of whites. Now, I would say, I think a liberal figure, I would say that we've lost, what, 30 people over a year on, and I'm not minimizing this, on the crimes at the hand of law enforcement, et cetera, not minimizing that. But when you compare that with the hundreds, I think we've lost like five, there have been like 538 black-on-black violent crimes so far this year. How mm-hmm. do we just ignore that? And that's what I want us to come to. Now, I think that, well, I think two things. What can we do about it? First of all, we have to start here by raising awareness. I really don't believe, for reasons that we just said, people just haven't looked at this. It's not that they're cruel. It's not they're inhuman. It's just not on the media circuit. And those who are in a position to get the attention of the camera, they just have not taken notice of that. It is our intent that we change that today, because this is an opportunity for us to grow and be more. I mean, how great will it be for us to come up with ideas that soothe, you know, to minimize what's going on? And I want to say another thing. I have compassion for the victims of these crimes, and I also have compassion for the perpetrators of these crimes. Hurt people hurt people. So that part cannot be ignored. Now, I think we do have to start by putting out the fire first. Before we can really get to the other part, we got to stop this. Now, ways that I think about it, I come up with two ideas. First of all, do the same thing that we did for that protest on Memorial Day. You see what we can do. We know what can be done. Get that same march organized. Take it to the south side of Chicago. Take it to the west side of Chicago. Take it to all these other high crime areas. If we do that, now one of the major issues, and I'm talking about not a violent protest, you know, just a calm protest. When we bring, and that's why that movement was so effective, when we bring public scrutiny, when it's looked at by the public, now because just the mere fact, well, a lot of things came out of that movement, you know, I'm not taking anything away from that, because they did get some laws changed. And I think more than anything else, it has brought public attention. The eyes of the world are watching these police officers, these racially motivated crime. The eyes of the world, and crime cannot sustain that kind of public scrutiny. Take it to the west side, take it to the south side, just like I said. That's what we need to do. This would stop a lot of that stuff. If someone were to say, you know what, we're taking back our communities, and I'm talking about the celebrity types. I'm not talking about the Joe Schmo on the street who nobody's really paying attention to. Make our voices heard, and we need the media type, whether we like it or not. That's what we need. Also, so that's one approach. Another thing, they always talk about, let's have the conversation about racial, you know, unrest. Let's have that conversation. Let's interact. Let's talk about this with whites. Let's white and black talk about it. Okay, have that conversation about the violence on the, let me stop saying the west side, in our inner city community. You know, that is the conversation. Can you imagine if we were having those kind of conversations on these major talk shows that we have? Let's just talk about it. That in and of itself would help these criminals would shy away when they know that they are being watched. But right, it would take away that cover of anonymity. Right now, these people know that they can do these crimes, and it's highly unlikely that there are going to be consequences. But the thing of it is, now if it were by law enforcement, then there are consequences because everybody is watching. And the thing is, there will be, like I said, there will be justice, because public awareness is not going to just let these people who have just brutally killed or racially motivated, they're not going to just walk away from this. Maybe at another time they would have. But because of the protest, they're not going to be able to walk away from this because they are being scrutinized now. So that's another thing. Have that conversation. And, okay, So now, kind of moving on. I mean, I think those are things. Did you want to say something, Jewel?
No, I think that what you're giving voice to is really important, because we're so, like we said in the last show, we're so focused on the duality of only one segment of life mattering, which, you know, I understand the arguments for it and everything behind that, but there's more to it. It's not just about one type of violence. And it has to matter all the time that life is taken, not only in certain situations, especially when the numbers are indicating huge, huge amounts of lives being taken that we never hear about. I mean, every now and then on the news, it'll say like, oh, so-and-so got shot. But there are no protests about that for the most part. There are no huge walks in D.C. about this and peaceful protests or writing letters. And, you know, there's just not a lot of activism surrounding it. So I think that's what you're calling up here, is just the awareness that there's more to the story, and that as a community, there can be a greater empowerment through understanding that the violence is prevalent. It's not just about focusing on how whites have taken power.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Great. Great. A final statistic that I want to give, and then I'm going to move on to some other ideas here that are, I think will be effective. Just as a sense of balance, because, see, that's where we are. We don't seem to have a sense of balance here. But just to put that in context, now, I read these statistics before, but I think they're relevant now. And there are far more whites that are killed by police officers than blacks. Now, the argument could be that there just are more white people, but nonetheless, I think this is relevant. And I repeat this. In 2017, there were 457 whites killed and 223 blacks. 2018, there were 399 whites killed and 209 blacks. 2019, 370 whites, 235 blacks. 2020, and this was early on, I mean, I didn't get anything farther than this, it was so far at that time, it had been 172 whites that were killed by police officers and 88 blacks. So why it's not that whites are not being killed, not that that's a great thing, but I just want to put that comparison. Now, done with the statistics, and I don't think it's anything, there's nothing controversial about what I'm saying here. These are just the facts. And, you know, and anybody can look this up. So in that regard, this is just what we have to accept. Now, the what are we going to do about it? Now, one of the things, okay, that we, again, balance. We need to stop and appreciate the harmony that we do have, the racial support. I mean, our Caucasian sisters and brothers have been there with us every step of the way. And even before this, they were out there when the Ku Klux Klan and all those white supremacists were there. There were many, 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 because I was kind of watching TV a little bit at that time. There were so many more whites out there than there were blacks. So when are we going to say, and if we are not able to see the love and support in that, you know, that says something. So we are still talking about how racist white people are, but look at how supportive in masses. And we're not talking about two or three. We are talking about thousands who have marched with us every step of the way, and they're continuing to do that, and their hearts are in the right place. So we have to take that into consideration. Another, and see, that speaks volumes. I mean, we need to say thank you, and I do. I say thank you to everybody who have come and embraced us and supported us, and they continue to do so. So another thing, be grateful for that. I want to look at the police department. Now, I don't know how many police we have in Chicago, 14,000 something I heard, but it is unrealistic. We cannot possibly believe that 14,000 people come out and risk their lives on a daily basis just to shoot up some black people. I mean, this is where we have to bring in the balance. My experience, and there are other people, I don't care what we say, there are some wonderful, wonderful police in that department. They are amazing. We need to thank them. Why are we not saying thank you for what you have done? Because they have done far more good than the few, not to minimize, but that's minuscule compared to the job that they do every day. And I think we need to say thank you. One of the examples that I put in my book was, seems like 1,000 years ago, but I was working as a nurse in ER. One of the things that always struck me, when they brought in children, and you know they brought them in on a regular basis, it was hard to get this officer. Once they gave it over, the child over to us, it was hard to get those officers to move away from that bed. It was like they were saying, you know what? I brought you in because you were hurt. And it might happen again, but not on my watch. I saw that so many times. It's like, how do we not appreciate that? Now, maybe we didn't have access to that particular scenario, but clearly that has been, I mean, they have served us well. So that's it on that part of it. The other thing I would like to say, we have so many successful black men. I mean, our cameras, I mean, just look at that. Why are these men not saying to these brothers in our communities, hey, you know what? I had troubles. I worked to get to where I am. I came up in a home that had no father. So this is doable. You know, there's some things we can look at life different. There's another way to go about looking at life and give them some clues. Now, one of the things I said, everybody just poo-poo this idea. One of the things that we have here, if a person gets a B average in high school, they can go to the city colleges free. Because everybody said, oh, they're not going to do that. How do we know? How do we know that that will be helpful? Give people something to work with. So, I mean, it's like that's what we need to do. These celebrities, just like you stood up front and center for the other movement, come on. Come on, guys. We have so much to offer you by your example. You are successful. You have the resources. Why don't you find a way, even if by satellite or something, to get your message to that website? Have those conversations. Bring awareness and let these people know we are not just, you know, it's not just a victim. We are also embracing a better life for the perpetrator of these crimes as well. And that's pretty much what I have to say on that. Now, oh, yeah, one other thing. What is our goal? What is the goal? I think that's another thing. I don't know. I think we may have lost sight of our goal here. Okay, you want to get rid of racism in America. Well, how do you do that? How do you determine who's the racist and who's not? Now, you know, the Ku Klux Klan, the white supremacists, well, that's pretty clear. They say who they are. But look at the thousands and thousands who were there to support us. Are they racist? So there's no way that we can determine that. So I think we need to get clear about what our goal is here. And I think our goal needs right now to stop and look at the man in the mirror. So that's it on that point, Julie.
All right. Those are some good points
now,
to touch on for sure.
Now, I don't know if you want to go into the self-esteem issues at this point.
We can.
Okay.
Yeah, it does. it does depart from this for sure. It definitely ties into your community and things that you, that you know you're facing. It's interesting. It's just so much. It's like a almost like an energy that permeates everything when we begin to look at some new options or some new ways of looking at things, because this dialogue is not really happening in the world. The only dialogue is happening is, are people for or against the BLM movement? When you get online, that's really all that's being discussed. Nobody is really truly discussing. I mean, I haven't heard a single person say to have compassion for a cop who has, you know, just committed a crime, whether it's racial or not.
Exactly.
But just that thinking is such a leap for people, which is understandable because we've been having patterns of things happening in the world. But you're bringing awareness to how we have to change our emotional responses and our perspectives to what is physically happening around us, or nothing will shift. Because if we continue to hate and point out all that proof for all the racial crime, and then once we've proved it, we reprove it, and then once we've proved it that time, we reprove it again. See guys, that's happening. Well, there was a time and place for that, and we know. That's why we're coming out and marching, and people are saying, yes, we know it's happening and we are affecting change. But we also know other things. We also know compassion. We also know that there is a place in people that is much deeper than the externalized anger that they are working through. So that deeper place is what we're trying to find in people. Hurt people, hurt people, like you said. So that cop somewhere in him, whoever he may be or she may be out in the world committing a crime or undue shooting of someone, that person lost a little something at some point. That person is hurting somewhere. So we have compassion for both ends, and we try to re-educate, and we try to focus the discussion into a more empowering place. And that's the place that we're trying to go. But it requires looking at the contrast. It requires looking at what's actually happening and coming up with some new things to look at and new directions to go.
Yes. And you know, another point, the law of attraction reigns supreme. And we really have to keep that in mind. The more we look at this negative stuff, The more that is our focus, the more we're going to get of that. The more we focus on racial hatred, the more we're going to get more of that. So, yeah. So having said that, I will just, because this is not going to take long, because I have a really different perspective on this, because, you know, talking to Jules about this. There is a behavior, and it is pretty much this particular part is also unique in the Black communities. And it doesn't kill us, but it just takes the life out of the self-esteem of our little girls. Now, in our community, what I understand now from dialogue with Julie, this is our thing. But every culture guy has their own thing, and it's about doing, engaging in behaviors that make us look outside of ourselves. In our culture, it just happens to be the hair thing. Now, I want us, you know, one example that I think I have it in my book. And we want to change this. We really want to raise awareness, because I really don't think parents know what they are doing. What they're not giving thought to what's actually happening here. I may have said this before, I'm not sure, but about the little girl who was like under a year old, or certainly under two, had so much weave in her hair that she couldn't hold her head up. Now, I'm sure there was a loving mother, but we're not thinking. We are so busy mimicking and parroting what we see on TV. We do so much to look like somebody else. We don't stop to look at what we already have going for ourselves. Now, the in addition to the self-esteem, that just to make, to force our little girls, and we got some of the cutest little black girls, or little girls, period, you know, why would you cover up their crown and glory with this synthetic stuff in their hair? I mean, why, let's start with looking at what we have to work with, and they got plenty to work with. Why not start there? Why would you want to make them think you're not beautiful enough as you are? And our little girls, you know, younger kids, they are bright, they're smart, they're intelligent, they're creative, beautiful imaginations. Let our girls work with their own hair. I think I said we would be the Vera Wang. Our little girls could be the Vera Wang of hair care products. But they will never have that opportunity. And this is not going away. So we've got generations who are going to grow up not even know that they have hair. Plus, you know, it's hard to keep it up. So a lot of it looks, you know, after a while you need to take this stuff out. But it's not so easy to do. So, you know, that's a process in and of itself. But it's damaging to the hair. They have to spend their playtime getting their hair done, most of it kicking and screaming all the way. They're in the space of adults, you know, the beauty shop gossip thing going on. That is just too much exposure for our little girls. Now, once they get to be adults and they choose this, and that's one thing, but let's give them the option, you know. So, and you know, but my point is, it's not just, that's the one that I had focused on. But Julie pointed that, like we say, she pointed out, all clubs got their own stuff. You know, we all, because the goal is, how do I look? And we're saying, let's focus on, how do I feel? And focus on the feelings of our children. So in that regard, first of all, look at it, mothers and fathers. Let's take that stuff out of their hair. I mean, it certainly is not more attractive than what our girls have. Also, with so much focus on their hair, I think we miss their true talent. We have some prodigies with our little black girls. We have Mensa material. We have children that are reading way before their time. But that is not nurtured. And if they have to spend that much time with their hair, that is what they're focused on. Their focus is not what I know or who I am. It is how I look. And I know that that's what's important because my mom, my dad say that's what's important. Children learn what they live, and what's important to our children is what's important to the caregiver. So we want to pull that back. We want to get into our children. We want to tell our children, I love you. Let's bring more love into our homes as parents. It's really important, and I was telling Julie, as a child, I know how much my mother loved me. I mean, there is no question, but that was never said to me. That's important. Let them know you're important. And instead of taking them to take this stuff out of their hair and spend time brushing it with your daughter, brushing their hair, letting them know how beautiful they are, because they are. We, all of us are. And we have to look at that. Encourage them to read. There's the greatest Law of Attraction children's book. It's from ages 5 to 105. Sarah and Solomon. Read that with your child. Go get your child a telescope. Broaden their horizon. A friend of mine said, just a quick example of that, she's got her grandson a telescope. It was never used. And because the parents say, well, he's not interested. He doesn't know to be interested. We think our children know way more than what they know. You know, I've heard parents say, well, you know, I don't teach my child to say hello. I want to give them that option. Let them know where their options are. Teach your child to say hello, please, thank you, excuse me, please. Just basic manners that we want to teach our children. I have a book. A book called Love Parent, and I put this in my book also. Love Parent, and it's by Bessie Otter Thompson. And I want to read a couple of little excerpts that I marked in here, and then, okay, let's see, page 5. Okay, this one said, this is to your children. Well, it's about children. It's Love Parent is the name of the book by Bessie Otter Thompson. Your feelings tell you everything. If parenting is important to your evolution, you'll feel ready, willing, and excited to begin. As you freely love your children as they deserve to be loved, God parents you as you deserve to be loved. Open your heart to all that your children bring you, and all that God is yours to enjoy. Children bring the caring heart of God. Help them to remember who they are by remembering who you are. And then there's one other one that's quick. That's on page, let's see, 43. Give me a second here. Okay. This one is about how children pick up fear habits. A child only gets nervous when she is told that something is wrong. Nothing she wants to try is wrong. However, something could be inappropriate for her age or inappropriate for her health. She wants to learn to love herself in everything she attempts. Show her how much you believe in her from the moment she is born. Then the union between the two of you reflects the wisdom of God. Danger is the idea that the universe is unsupportive. Fear is what develops when your child believes it. So that's kind of my story. So, Julie, I'm going to give it back. I'll give it back to you. I'll bring this up if I have time. It's just such a great story. It's an I am story, but we'll see if we have time for that. So I'm going to give this back to you.
Yeah, those are pretty powerful quotes from Bessie Otter Thompson. And this is such a huge topic. We could probably make 800 shows just on what we're talking about here today. But you know, last week we brought up this quote from Alice Walker. We sort of left the audience to consider this. There was actually two of them, but the one I'm thinking about right now is, look closely at the present you are constructing. It should look like the future you are dreaming. So that was a really powerful Alice Walker quote. And I think much of what we're talking about here is related to that, because what you're saying is, in essence, look at how your responses are to things that are happening in your community, because the way that you're responding is informing what you're going to see later. So if your dream is to have something peaceful, if your dream is for little girls to have their own hair and to be proud of it and not feel less than, but to think they're beautiful, then we have to look at how we're responding to them. We have to look at what we're creating in our present in order to see that and realize that empowerment later, in order to see the peace that is coming later. How are we responding to what's happening? So it's okay to look at physically what's happening and say, okay, yes, I see that there's some disharmony there. Okay, yes, I see that there's a little girl who can't hold her head up and she doesn't even have free will yet to decide if she wants those in her hair or not. So we have the noticing, but then we have to step into the power, which is how can we then respond? How can we then change our actions and respond in a way that's empowering? So if we're creating a world of peace, if we're creating unification and oneness, we can't be against people. We can't be against the cops and against a certain race of people or against anything. We have to be for the peace and for all of the things that we want to see externalized. And I think that's kind of like the central theme that we're coming to in the show, and which we'll kind of be continuing on next week. And these two things are very specific to your book. Like with my book, Home of Happy, in a split second, it's a little bit more about living from within, because I taught myself to basically be homeless and be happy. In your book, you're giving people more of those theoretical tools to start going within to empower themselves. And within that, you came to a passion and awareness for talking a little bit about the racial tension and also the hair issue within your community. But we can branch that out to anybody. We can say, okay, I live in, you know, let's say close proximity to Hollywood. It's very focused on the external. It is very focused. I hear all the time, oh, I can't get work and I can't act unless I get Botox. I can't do this and can't do that unless my lips are plumped. Well, we need to really look at that, you know, and it starts with enough people responding by saying, I'm not doing it. If enough people didn't do it, it wouldn't perpetuate. There's a tipping scale, but enough people do it. So that's where I'm coming into frame with the Alice Walker quote, which is like, we have to look at what we're constructing. If we are choosing certain things and continuing to construct certain things, we'll see the perpetuation of them. So at some point, we need to come out of the reactiveness and just into responses and start empowering ourselves to just make better choices at the individual level, basically.
Exactly.
So, yeah, I don't know if that makes sense, but that's sort of what everything you're saying is bringing up for me right now. That's sort of where it's headed to.
Exactly. And I hope it's bringing up the same thing in everybody else. These are things that are not insurmountable. It's a matter of shifting our thinking to what we don't want, from what we don't want to that which we do want. And the beauty of that, if we just decide, you know, we want to take back our communities. I don't know if that's the best way of saying that, but we want to live in more loving spaces. When we do that, the law of attraction will support that. So that's what but we have to focus on what it is that we do want, and it has to happen. If that's what it is, that's exactly. Love is the answer. I mean, that's a topic that's in my book as well. Ultimately, and Julie has brought this back so beautifully, because to the positive aspect of what it is we do want. And ultimately, love. We are either offering love with our behavior, or we are asking for love. These people, these victims and all that, they're asking for love. And we have plenty of love to give. The one other little thing I want to say, and this is just really in connection, just a great little story. I was listening to the I Am Effect by Harrison Klein. And that's in my book also. And it's a little bit different, but it's whatever we say after I am is like a genie in the bottle. And what he was saying, be conscious of your I am. I am, because whatever I say, if I'm saying I am love, the words I am connects us to the universe. It connects us, it invokes love, and it connects us to our source. And we can all use I am phrases, see what that feels like in the solar plexus. And it's just a really cool way to shift our thinking. And when we begin to see the advantage of this, one thing you got to be careful, if you want to hold on to your misery, this is not probably not the show you want to listen to. Because once you get involved with shifting and looking at something just like me, I mean, you won't go back because it's too uncomfortable. It's like I've worn those clothes before. You know, like I put this message out there, and I intend that it will be well received. But you will not hear me talking about those statistics again. That's a done deal with me. I'm looking at solutions. I'm opening to receive solutions. And, hey, I am love. We all are. So that's it for me. I do want to talk about my book at the end, update the status for that, Julie. But, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. We are love. Yeah, I'll give you a second to end there to make sure they know what's happening, as I know we touched on that on the last show. We cannot hate ourselves into healing. We can't hate other people into healing. It doesn't exist. So any movement, anything that comes from hate or what we don't want is just the perpetuation of it. And I point this out just as a little bit of a similarity, but you know, obviously I'm not of, you know, African descent or anything like that. Well, actually part of me is, so I don't know what is, I don't know what is, or potentially, I don't know what's quantifiably enough for me to quantify as part of the Black community, but I was raised Jewish, and have heard, you know, many anti-Semitic things throughout my entire life and things like that. And I think similarly, you know, there is a holding on in the Jewish community to the idea that we are hated by all people in the Middle East, and we can't hold on to that and heal at the same time. I've not met one person who hated me at all, and I've met more than I can ever remember people from the Middle East ever have anything negative to say to me or about me. I have heard many, many people here in America say hateful things about Jewish people. So it's just an interesting thing. But where my mind goes is that it is my choice to respond. It's not a denial of our past. It's not a disrespect of the past. It's not a denial of the pains that people suffered. There's an appreciation and a love and a compassion there. But to change the thought and the thinking from hate into love, and to know that all people are brothers and sisters, and if we begin to move through the world as if that is already the truth, you start to experience it outwardly. And so that's really what it is in a nutshell for me. That doesn't work for everyone. People have resistance to it because we're stuck in autopilot of always having to prove that it's not working and always having to prove that people are against you. And it's because it's what's comfortable and it's what you know. But I offer to people as an exercise to consider changing the thought and considering that maybe people are for you. Assume first that they're for you until you see otherwise. Always assume the best first. And that's just an option for people. So that's what we're bringing to the show, to help people go from within and say, how can I choose from my place and my point in my life, a new perspective that will bring me just a little bit of a different result, potentially. That's the mission. So, but yeah, I know your book is in transition and you're going through a publication process. So just give them a little update on where you are with that process.
I will. And I just want to say, you know, just coming back, that's why these two books gel so well. If anybody is showing evidence of what can happen if you change your thinking, it would be Julie's book. I mean, to be homeless, and we don't want to belabor that point, but I can't say enough. She could easily have gone either way with this. So that's the beauty of this. We have evidence that this stuff does indeed work. And anything less than that, just let that be unacceptable. If a thought does not feel good, let's just think again. Okay, so now regarding my book, I did say that it would be, the PDF copy would be available today. That's not so. So now I want you just to go to my website, ejsealsjackson.com, and we'll keep updates from there. It's an editing process. The one thing I have learned about what appears to be a delay, the book only gets better. So it is my anticipation. It will be worth the wait. I'm pretty sure the PDF version will be up there fairly soon, not making any commitments, because once that's something, I really like to stick to that. But that should be up fairly soon, within a week. I can say with confidence, before the next show, it will be there. That will be the version, the absolute version, which I want to make sure of that. That is the one that's going to go into the published book. So I didn't want to put that version out there and then have change, because once I put it out there, that is the one it is, and it will be available on my website. In terms of the ebook, that's just kind of in limbo now, and we're just kind of working on that. So, you know, that's kind of it. But all, you know, live life, love it. This is what Julie does, and this is what I so enjoy watching her unfold and live and taking leads, following her lead, because like I see what can be done with it. Change your thinking, change your life. A problem cannot exist. And see, you have to do this, do the work, and figure this out for yourself. This is really powerful. A problem can only exist in our thinking. If we release the thought, change the thought, get back into the flow of life, it will disappear. And I have done this now enough times. You know, in the book I talk about just knowing the feeling of love. And I do this now, and I do it on a regular basis, and it never fails me. If there is an issue that comes up, I get still, allow, you know, a meditation, which is what we do to quiet the mind and connect with our source, which is love. When we can feel love, and we can feel it in the solar plexus, which is another thing, go through the heart. I heard you say that, Julie, and I've never heard that said before, but that made a real difference in the way that I process stuff. You take it, let it come out of your head, allow it to come out of your head, go through your heart and into the solar plexus. We will find the feeling of love there. When we are in alignment or feel the feeling of love, the world falls by the wayside. There is no issue that will not be resolved. I am the answer that I seek. There's no issue that will be resolved if we find the feeling of love or allow for the feeling of love, which is in the solar plexus, to come forth. So want to leave it on that note.
That's a good note. Yeah, it all comes from that feeling, and it has to be authentic. You really have to feel it. A good exercise is just to start with the thing that you love the most. It could be a pet, a baby, whatever it may be, and just to hold on to that feeling and begin to see what it actually feels like. And then expand from there. Take the community that you think is against you and hold them in that same feeling, because that community is hurting. So, you know, I believe through and through that we can transform the world by coming back within, from coming back into what we can control, which is everything from the individual space and through our loving hearts. And that's why we're here, because we truly love people, and we truly want to serve and help them and just be an option. It's not an option for everybody here, but it's an option for maybe a few, and those few will be better for it. So. I thank you so much for being with me again. We will continue a bit of this discussion and go deeper into it next week for the fourth show of Living From Within, Part 4. And just to close it out, I'd like to leave you with a quote just to be stirring on, to consider to yourself until our next show. And this is by Nelson Mandela. Our world is not divided by race, color, gender, or religion. Our world is divided into wise people and fools. And fools divide themselves by race, color, gender, or religion.
Wow.
So just allow that to sink in a little bit. Think on it a bit. I think it speaks volumes. And I believe we'll be gathering here again next Thursday. And thank you so much for everything, everyone, and we'll talk to you soon.
Yes. Inner peace, I mean, world peace begins with inner peace. World peace begins with inner peace. Love you, Julie. Thank you so
love
much
you too, EJ.
For allowing this opportunity. Okay, folks. See you next
All
week.
All right. Have a beautiful week.